Rich, good to have you with us again on a big special day for you.
Yeah, at least we didn't get too much snow. You know, I'm glad we're not in Kansas City, so we're excited.
Yeah, and I imagine this is just a day that you look forward to every year for a number of different reasons. You get the official commitment from these players you've been recruiting, but also to kind of move into the very next segment of the year and look ahead towards spring football coming up down the line. So a big, important milestone for you every year this time.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, this year was particularly challenging just because, this is the first time we've had to go through handling six classes. And you know, in terms of scholarship-wise and the different dynamics it creates, it was a challenge. You know, we didn't have as much money to work with. Really, nobody in the country did. And so we had to be kind of selective with what we did and where we kind of earmarked for scholarship purposes. It's a completely different dynamic than we've ever had to deal with.
Are these easy conversations, or how's everybody kind of taking that when you do go in and talk to some of these recruits that may be expecting one thing and you say, listen, we're in a tight spot, as you know?
It's been an education process really for the families as well as the kids. And as they started to go out on the road or started going making visits, they kind of got the gist of the way things were going to work. You know, a year ago, what we termed all year as our super seniors, if the institution was willing to absorb their scholarship money, we didn't have to count it. So last year's recruiting class, we recruited just like we normally would. Well, the NCAA came out with a rule in June stating that from that moment forward, there would be no super seniors. There would be in terms of eligibility, but not in terms of money. So we were all working under the assumption that, you know, this senior class would come off the books as well, and we would just work our way through the five-year period until, you know, the COVID kids, so to speak, cycled themselves out, but that wasn't the case. So one of the things that we did or have always done is we hold back a little bit of summer money. That was really the foundation on what we had to recruit with to begin. Now, you lose people in transitions from year to year, and that adds to it a little bit more. But, you know, for the money that we had to operate with, we were really happy with the class.
And I would imagine, too, it's a case where you've got some guys that are coming through the program. You get an extra year, so you like to see that particular aspect of it, but it does create problems on the back end of things.
Yeah, it does. So, you know, to an interesting point, and I started to try and explain to people, is that the class of 2020 and 2021, from an eligibility standpoint, are the same class. So they will, in essence, be done eligibility-wise together. And so that class right now is sitting at like 47 guys between the two classes. And so it just makes your dynamic and your planning a little bit different.
You had to go through and have those conversations with the super seniors last year as they're, hey, are you sticking around? Are you going? Do you want that fifth year? When do you have those conversations with, you mentioned it, like the 2020 and 2021 guys are kind of going through the same process. When do they kind of start to decide what their life and career path ends up with?
You know, so what we did when COVID happened is we actually sat down, not just with the super seniors, but with everybody. And we had initial conversations through the classes and kind of, you know, delved into, you know, what is their plan? How are they going to play out their eligibility? What are they going to do? And so we've already had those initial conversations. And so right after signing date, that's going to be my next order of business, is we're going to have yearly discussions with each of those classes and say, okay, so here's what you said a year ago. Is that still the track that you're on? Is that still what your intent is? So, for example, Keelon Hunter and Braden Dye are two kids that technically had another year of eligibility, but I knew going into this season this was going to be their last year. They wanted to get out, wanted to start their careers. I can't begrudge anybody for wanting to do that. And so we knew in advance that they were both going to come off the books for this fall.
I would imagine that also kind of changes a little bit of what you're focusing on when you go into this recruiting cycle as well, on the needs you're going to have down the line.
Yeah, you kind of work a precarious balance between what are your needs and what are the things that you need to address, and then you take a little bit of a page off the NFL draft manual, and then who are the best available players, and so you try and work a blend of that. You know, obviously for us, we took a big hit on the offensive side of the football this last year, so we we obviously need to address the wide receiver position as an area of need. You know, the running back position is still a question mark. Now, spring will answer some of those questions. We did hold some money back for some transfer slash portal kids, so we're not maxed out right now by any stretch of the imagination. But what we wanted to do is kind of assess what the younger talent looked like and then infuse that with this year's class, because as we all know sitting here, the likelihood that those guys are going to help us on the football field next fall is probably pretty slim.
Whenever you look at it, and we just wrap up this recruiting class and you get all these guys signed, coming off of an outright MIAA title, obviously a big thing. That's one of the big keys you had written down. How big is that whenever you've got so many other teams within this conference that are gunning for these same guys of saying, once again, we're sitting here at the top, and that's just who we are?
You know, it's one of the things that we can recruit to here. You know, our tradition and our culture, I think, sells itself. We have a great group of kids. Our players actually host these guys when they come onto campus. And, you know, I think anytime you can get young kids that are highly motivated around our kids, that, you know, it just helps to sell our brand and what we're trying to get accomplished up here. So it's, you know, the difficulty being – where we're at, it's a little bit challenging in terms of there's a lot of this going on in football right now because of the early sign date. A lot of Division II schools are really trying to squeeze people prior to NLI date. So when we were in the playoffs for 3 weeks, you know, everybody else was having recruiting visits and everybody else was trying to get commitments out of those kids before we ever even got into the high schools. And so, you know, we weren't able to have any official visits with high school kids until after the holidays, where that gave everybody else a little bit of a leg up. The nice part for us is when we are able to get into the high school, there's a lot of great things that we can talk about.
Now, you mentioned the early signing date period, and how's recruiting changed in the last several years? Not only with that, but the transfer portal and things like that. How's that kind of changed the philosophy of what you want to do when you go out?
It's changed it in a lot of dynamics, and I'll try and take each one as you discussed them. But, you know, the early signing period has changed. It's helped in a sense because we identify we're not spinning our tires on guys that are going to get offered Division I scholarships. So it helps from that angle. The second piece of the dynamic that's changed is kind of what I told you, is that because of that, there's a lot of schools that are trying to, I'll use the term squeeze, pressure, however you want to say it, get kids to commit well before, you know, what the traditional recruiting period is. And we've always had a rule around our place that if a kid's committed to another school, you know, we try and honor that as much as possible. Now, if he reaches out to us, you know, he's committed someplace and he reaches out to us, then I'll allow my staff to talk to him. But we're not going to go actively recruit somebody that's already pre-committed. And so, you know, a little bit of it has been, you have to make evaluations and assessments and offer kids a little bit earlier than what we traditionally do. And then the portal adds a completely different dynamic. So before I went to the National Football Coaches Convention, there were 1,900 college football players in the portal. And those aren't junior college kids. I mean, you have an entire market of junior college kids you have to add into the conversation as well. So it's really changed the way people are recruiting. So the ability to take a kid who's already played in college, who has game tape, who already knows what college is, college work, those types of things, is appealing to a lot of people. You know, we're more built from the ground up. We really do want to focus on development in high school kids and getting those kids immersed into our culture. But I'd be remiss if I told you that we don't look. We're going to continue to look. I like the four-year model just because I think those kids are better prepared most of the time to be able to come in and be successful students at Northwest Missouri State and also understand, you know, what a year-round college football program really looks like.
Whenever you're going through that and you're kind of trying to figure out, man, look at the transfer guys, is it a four-year guy, do you spend that much time? How much of this is mapped out by the entire staff? You as a head coach have to take on a lot of it too, but then obviously Brandon Clayton as the recruiting coordinator, is he mapping out a lot of that at the same time?
Yeah, he is. You know, we actually have our young guys are vetting the portal first. So how the process works is we get a weekly report on the portal, you know, and the portal isn't plug and play. So I think it's a misnomer to a lot of people. So it's going to show, you know, it's going to show Rich Wright, you know, John Coffey, it doesn't say your position. It doesn't say what you play. It just says that you've entered the portal and you're from X school. So then what you've got to do is you've got to do the legwork and figure out, okay, what school, you know, what's his position? What's his height and weight? Did he play? Did he not play? You've got to vet all those things. So, you know, our young guys take the name, they move it through the process, they at least watch, you know, the tape to start with. If they feel like it's a guy we'd potentially be interested in, then we've got to cross-reference what other schools are recruiting him. So I've seen guys that are Division II guys that are getting Power 5 offers. And so it's not a foregone conclusion that, you know, he's going to go from a D2 or FCS and he's going to come down. He could very easily go up as easily as he could come down. So it adds a lot to the dynamic. If we vet him and we like him, goes to the position coach, then we've got to further vet it. So it's a process. It's not as simple as they make it.
When you see a guy like Al McKellar come in a season ago, obviously Al, a fantastic season for the Bearcats, a Harlan Hill finalist. Was that one that your eyes get a little bit wide of, like, say, Al McKellar's on the transfer portal and make that call?
So, you know, the interesting thing about Al is that, you know, Al could have been a kid if he had come out in January and entered the portal. It could have been an entirely different conversation. We may not have, frankly, ended up with him. It was the timing. It was June. So he enters the portal in June, and, you know, a lot of people have spent their money. And we were just looking for the right fit, and he ended up being it. And obviously, you know, the rest is history, as they say. So had a really good senior year and played well for us. But, you know, some of it's timing and luck, too.
No, again, today is National Signing Day, and with the high school kids in particular here, we'll talk more individually about some of the ones that you're bringing in. But when I look down the list, one of the things that really strikes me with your list from year to year is you go back to some of the same high schools you've had success bringing in a lot of great talent into this program. And there's in the Kansas City area in particular, notice a lot of players coming from schools that traditionally send out a lot of good football players, and it looks like the relationship you have with a lot of the coaches down there really pays off.
Yeah, that's a huge piece to our recruiting. You know, anytime you can get a kid from a good program and good culture, chances are he's going to fit yours. And so we look beyond just the, you know, obviously we're looking for talented players, but we're also looking for kids that are going to fit us. I routinely tell guys that, and I don't do it till the exit interview, so I think I sometimes surprise them, but, you know, when you come up here on a visit, I'm interviewing you as much or more than you're interviewing me. You know, they think they're coming up here to check out the school and what's the food like and how do the girls look on campus, and, you know, they want to see the facilities and all that stuff. But, you know, I'm actually interviewing them. I want to, because after being here for 18 years, I understand what fits our football team, what fits our weight room, what fits our training room, what fits the meeting rooms that they're going to go into. And so just trying to figure out the personality profile of those kids when they're here is a really important piece. And, you know, so when you have a trust factor like we do in Kansas City and you know, some of the areas that we typically recruit, it just makes my job a lot easier, because having relationships with those guys, if that guy is standing on the table for a kid from his high school, I trust that I know it. I know he's going to fit our culture.
Well, John talks about the pedigree of some of these high schools, and you're used to going back to some of these coaches over and over. And we'll touch on these a little bit later on down the line. But we do see some siblings with Northwest players that come around. We also see some siblings, other guys around the MIAA. The recruiting pitches, do they vary whenever you go from older brother was here at this position, we're going to go with younger brother here at this position, or is it kind of a similar sell?
It's, you know, every kid is different, you know, and what they're concerned with and what they want is different. You know, it's funny to me because you made me smile. You guys can't see it because I'm on the radio, but we have a lot of brother combinations.
Oh, yeah.
We always have. You know, I guess that says good things about the experiences their siblings are having while they're here. And it's been something that we've always kind of hung our hat on. And, you know, it's fun, actually, to get a younger brother from a rival school, you know, and I know you're going to talk about one from Smithville in particular. So, you know, those are good things too. But, you know, sometimes brothers want to play together, but other times they want to carve out their own path. And I can get on board with both those philosophies.
You know, one thing too, when you talk about that, I think another key aspect is that you feel pretty good that the parents or feel good about that first brother that's gone through your program to where they feel comfortable sending another son to play for you then.
Absolutely. I'll give you an example. You know, when we got my wife is from Iowa City, Iowa, and went to the Catholic school there, which was Regina. And you know, Doug Volstead is one of our dads, and he's so immersed in that school district. And I can remember going in there to recruit Jake. And, you know, 3 years later, I'm traipsing right back through the same halls to go get Isaac. And it's, you know, but those parents are the ones that, that really promote your program. They promote your brand. They, you know, they're as integral a part in the recruiting process as any of us, just because they're going back to their communities. They're the ones that are, you know, talking Northwest up and the quality of our football program and the quality of the experience their kids had, not just as football players, but as students.
I know we don't get to see and meet all of them, but I know the Volstats are a couple parents, too, that we've really enjoyed talking to and good folks out there. When we look at it, of course, there's a huge stamp on the Midwest with what you do year in and year out, of course. There's one I got to throw out. Is this the first time we've had a Northwest recruit from the state of Idaho? Now, granted, a transfer, but we don't see many Idaho guys here.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever had an Idaho guy. You know, that was just one we were looking for. You know, we were inexperienced at tackle. We felt like we needed to losing the left side of our offensive line, losing both Tanner and Gabe. You know, they're big parts of our success for multiple years. And, you know, just wanted somebody with some experience that, that could come in and battle right away. And it, he just fit. You know, it was, you know, he came on a visit. We focused on transfers prior to Christmas because we were hoping to get those guys in so they could go through spring practice with us. And, you know, after meeting him, he actually came up with his girlfriend, and it was just a good fit.
Now, overall, you've got a total of 31 from the high schools coming in, 5 transfers coming in, and breaking down by states, of course, Missouri with 15, Kansas 6. But one state that you've had a lot of success with through the last several years, and not only bringing them in, but they've been integral parts of your program. You've got 5 more coming in from Florida.
Yeah, you know, I kind of delved back into our connections down there. I spent, as an assistant, I spent 5 years down recruiting the state of Florida, and really from if you went from Jacksonville down to Jupiter and then came across Alligator Alley from Naples, basically back up towards Ocala, I've just got a lot of experience down there. And so when you spend that much time in a place, you learn what the good programs are, and you learn, you know, just like you do here in the Midwest. And so we felt good about the kids that we brought up. You know, as a little extra added bonus to you, every time we brought a kid up from Florida, it was cold as heck. So, you know, that,
give them the real experience.
That really worked in my favor. There was one kid that we have these big green jackets that we gave the kids, you know, that weren't dressed appropriately, and he was huddled up with that with the hood up his entire visit, but he ended up committing, so I guess all is good.
No doubt about that. Another thing that really strikes me from year two, you look at the list of the players, you list their honor roll students, their GPAs, and the fact that the majority of these guys are multiple sport type of guys.
Yeah, you know, we always are big proponents of the multi-sport guys. You know, first of all, it shows them that they're competitive outside of just football, you know, and that's something that we look for, you know, as far as personality trait. I'm looking for somebody that wants to compete in all aspects of their life. And when you're a multi-sport athlete, you know, you usually concede that, you know, one sport's a little better for you than the other, but you're still willing to go put yourself out there and compete, and I think that's great. The other piece of it that I think is important, though, is that guys that specialize too early, we've always found that they have difficulty. There's not more upside once we get them onto campus. You know, if you've had year-round strength and conditioning, if you've had coaching since you were in seventh grade, if you've done all the drill work, if you do nothing but football for 365 days, and you've done that for 5, 6, 7 years, then you better be a darn good football player on film, because how much more upside can I create for you when you get to college? And so that's the other, you know, neat part about the multi-sport kid. That kid hasn't been in a weight room, you know, because he goes from season A to season B to season C, you know, sometimes to season D. And so to get them to train like a college football player for a year, you usually see a lot of uptick with those kids. So if you're evaluating the same two kids on tape, you know, and all of a sudden start to think about the upside, that lends itself oftentimes to the multi-sport kid.
Along those same lines, from a body standpoint, is there, I know like in baseball, if a kid is a pitcher, obviously throwing through, and then there's a question about his arm maybe just overused by the time he gets to the college level or pro level. Is there something along the lines of that with the football players as well, or is it a little bit different type of thing?
I think it's a little bit different. It's really just more of the, you know, just that specialization. It, again, you know, how much better can you make a kid? It's kind of like I would liken it to running 40s. You know, you can do certain things to accentuate speed, but there's only so much you can do. And so if that kid has had all that at his disposal for his entire high school career and he's not physically going to get bigger, you know, where's the upside lie within that?
Again, we are broadcasting live from A&G Restaurant in downtown Maryville. It's the National Signing Day program with head coach of the Bearcat football team, Rich Wright. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the recruits that he's bringing in for the upcoming year. That's coming up right after this timeout from KXCV KRNW.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Clarinda Regional Health Center, emphasizing the importance of keeping annual well-child visits so the physical, mental, and emotional needs of children are met. For more on CRHC's pediatric providers, clarindahealth.com.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Bearcat Lumber on East 1st Street in Maryville, providing windows, roofing, siding, and doors for new home construction, as well as materials and plans for outbuildings, shops, and garages. More Bearcat Lumber Services is at 660-562-0300.
Support for the Bearcats comes from Bearcat Booster Club, impacting every Northwest student athlete by providing a source of funds to improve athletic equipment for teams and programs. Membership information is available at bearcatsports.com.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the Maryville Forum. In print or online at maryvilleforum.com, the forum provides local news, sports, and information, and news updates throughout the day. More at 660-562-2424.
Support for KXCV KRNW is brought to you by A&G Restaurant at 208 North Main in Maryville. A&G offers more than 100 menu items, Super Bonanza each weekday, Greek night every Friday, and gift cards for the holidays. More information is available at agrestaurant.com.
And welcome back to the KXCV KRNW National Signing Show here at A&G Restaurant. Along with Matt Trenton, I'm John Coffey, and the head coach of the Bearcat football team, Rich Wright, is with us as we are concentrating on National Signing Day today, the first day that they can sign national letters of intent to play football at their chosen school. And Rich, again, looking at the group of signees, another fabulous group that you have coming in, and we might just talk about a few of these individually and maybe start at the top alphabetically here with Zach Atkins.
Yeah, Zach is a real good player, a receiver out of Blue Valley Southwest. He was first-team All-State. He was a kid that came up, and we tested him a couple weeks ago, and really good route runner. Great body control, good hands. You know, I got to tell you a quick story on our release, because I see it here. He called Coach Sturdy, or texted Coach Sturdy this morning and said, can you please change my weight, because everybody's asking me if I'm sick. He's actually 195 pounds, not 175 pounds. So, you know, kid that's selected to the Shrine Bowl this year, you know, he's going to be a really solid receiver for us and a great student too.
Next up, we have a defensive back, and you kind of touched on that, of beefing that up, and a Florida guy, Amir Austin, coming in, a 5'10", 180 defensive back.
Yeah, he's over from the west side of the state, Newsom High School. It's basically just outside of Tampa, Florida. And Amir, the thing that jumps off at you right away is his cover skills. He's real fluid with his hips. I think he was one of the top interception guys in the state of Florida his senior year. A lot of talent. Came up here, was kind of quiet on his visit, but you know, really seemed to like Maryville, fit him well. You know, he's a good all-around athlete and a good student as well.
Then you got Gavin Bell, a 6'6 defensive lineman out of El Dorado, Kansas, down around Wichita, a guy that in high school's played both on the offensive and the defensive side of the line.
Yeah, you know, Gavin, I'm really excited about him. You know, first and foremost, he's a defensive lineman, so you kind of take that with a grain of salt that I'm gonna like those guys. But Gavin is interesting note for him. If y'all remember the name Wes Bell, Wes was coach at Missouri Western as well as Central Missouri, and that's his son. and he's got a big, thick frame. He's tough. He runs well for a big kid. You know, I was really impressed with him. I take guys through individual drills in the defensive line, and one of the things I look at is his ability to change direction, and this kid can definitely do that. Plays with a big-time motor. I think he's going to be an outstanding football player for us.
It's funny. I saw Wes Bell tweet about, oh, Bearcats are welcome here anytime coming to the school. It's going to be weird seeing him wear green now, isn't it?
No, it's not. As a matter of fact, I gave him a really hard time about that. I was like, I can't wait to see you in green. So he was, you know, he's excited. Great family. He's just a solid football player. He had a lot of options, both, you know, as you guys said, he played offensive and defensive line. You know, some people were looking at him in the O-line, some people in the D-line. And anytime I've got those two scenarios, I'm always going to opt. You know, if a guy can play both, it's really hard to find quality defensive linemen, and I think this kid is definitely going to be one.
Next up on our list, we have Will Bushman, a defensive back, a sectional qualifier, 300-meter hurdles. So he's an athlete. He's got some speed. 254 career tackles, so he doesn't shy away from the contact. You have to like that in defensive back.
Yeah, you know, that's right in our backyard at Park Hill. He's a real physical kid. He played down in the box for them. So the big test was going to be to see how fluid he was, you know, playing in the back end, because wasn't going to play linebacker for us, and he came up here in his testing day and really impressed. And he's just one of those multi-sport kids that we like to recruit. Great family. You know, Coach Sims now is at Park Hill and does an outstanding job, so we were excited to sign Will.
Yeah, when you talk about Park Hill, I think you look at that entire school district. There's a lot of folks that come from Northwest Missouri as instructors going to that Park Hill school district and doing well.
It never hurts when I see all those Bearcat logos on the teacher's door when I walk into the school. So I know I've got some helpers down there.
Next on the list here, Hayden Essex, a 5'11", another defensive back. This one from Blue Valley in Olathe, Kansas. Again, coming out of a very good program there, Blue Valley.
Yeah, you know, they have a, you know, Kyle Zimmerman came from that high school. You know, we've had a good tradition with those kids. And Hayden was another kid that, you know, even more so than the last, he basically played outside linebacker for him. And the reason is, and it makes complete sense, is in high school, the closer you can get those guys to the line of scrimmage, the more impact they can have. And, you know, so everything we watched was as a linebacker. And it wasn't until we got him up on campus that we really kind of figured out what kind of an athlete he is. That's one thing that we've done the last 2 years. Coach Sturdy was pretty adamant about it, that he wanted to test those guys and felt like it was really good for them in the evaluation process beyond just watching tape. And where it helps you is in these tweener guys, these guys that are playing out of position. And this was got one kid that really jumped off the screen for us on film as far as his physicality, but we were like, can he play in the back end? Well, he came up here, and he's got great feet. He's explosive. He's got like a 35-inch vertical jump. I mean, he can jump out of the gym. He's fast, you know, so he checks all the boxes.
Another defensive back coming in from Daytona Beach, Florida, Caleb Evans, a 5'10", 180-pounder, coming for, again, Sunshine State.
Yeah, you know, Mainland High School, Daytona Beach, it's my dad lived about 8 miles up the coast in Ormond by the Sea for several years. Caleb was a kid that I know his high school coach. So his head football coach, Coach Roland, was at Flagler, which is just a little bit of north of Daytona, and he's at Mainland now, and he called me on this kid. And this kid's highlight film is like, wow. First of all, he's playing against great competition, but he will absolutely blow you up. And I like guys in the secondary that'll do that for us. And runs really well, very good footwork, and he's a kid that could potentially play for us early.
Now we go from Florida to the other end there in California, bringing in a guy as a transfer, a place kicker in Noah Agostella.
Yeah, Noah is a kid that we saw on tape, really liked his film. You know, we had some issues in the kicking game with our youth and just felt like we needed to create a competition there. Super accurate with his field goals, has good pop in his leg, and so when we got the opportunity to bring him in before Christmas and he decided to commit, we were really happy about that.
We've seen some good Bearcats come out of Wentzville, Missouri. Jay Harris also joining that, a 6'2", 192-pound running back.
Yeah, this dude's a big sucker. You know, he walks into the room, and he looks like a college football player. Jay's a really talented kid. You know, two-time all-conference selection. He was the player of the year for their high school as a junior. He's got a chance to have some really big upside. It's just going to be learning our system. But anytime you can get a back of that size coming out of high school, you got to take it. And he's got better speed than you would think, and it shows up on film.
Also back to Florida, Daytona Beach area, this time with Chris Lewis, a defensive back coming in as a three-year starter at his high school.
Yeah, so Chris is at the rival school down in Daytona Beach. So there's Mainland and there's Seabreeze. And, you know, Coach Brown is a guy that I got to know when I was an assistant coach. And Seabreeze, if you know anything about Florida high school, is historically had a really proud tradition, and they fell on some hard times. Coach Brown took the program over and has really transformed it. They were 7-5 this year, had a good season, and Chris has played both sides of the football, but we're going to look at him at defensive back. He did an outstanding job here on his test day. He moves around real fluid. He can play either. He can play both corner and safety, which makes, you know, which creates some versatility for us.
Next up, we have the lone quarterback from this class, Henry Martin, coming in from Leawood, Kansas, and a three-star guy coming to the Northwest.
Yeah, we were really excited about this kid. I think he's got outstanding upside. You know, the thing that really jumps off to me, at least on tape when you watch him play, is he can throw the ball 50 yards down the field, and from his mannerisms, it just looks like he's flicking it. I mean, it just explodes off of his arm. It doesn't look like there's a lot of effort to it. You know, he's been in a high-level program with regards to understanding offenses, checking things, checking at the line of scrimmage. So he's not going to get blown away by our system. He's going to have to learn the terminology and the things it takes to be successful. But that was a really solid get for us.
And we talked a little bit earlier about brothers coming into the program. You've got Harrison Merriman coming in from Monette, Missouri. I believe his brother Wes, a member of your team already. And looks like you got a couple guys that could play pretty good on the offensive line there.
Yeah, you know, big Harrison, you know, and I say big, when you're 6'5", 307 coming out of high school, Harrison wins the all-hair team, guys.
That's saying something with some of them.
He would be in the top three of mullets. And remember, I grew up in the 80s. He would be in the top three of power mullets I've ever seen. He's got the hair all day long. No, really good football player. He just obliterates people when he blocks them. He's big. He's physical. He plays with it nasty. You know, I think he's going to be a really good player here. Two-time All-American in wrestling. He was 307 on his senior day when he came up. He was weighing in right around 290, I think, on the day that he visited. You know, so he's having another great wrestling year. I like wrestlers in the line of scrimmage. Great family. Wes is doing good stuff for us, so we're really excited about him.
When you think about the hair and a guy that's a wrestler and playing on the offensive line, you know the personality is going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah, that'll fit that room perfect.
It'll match.
So some guys you got to interview, and then other guys you just look at and you'd be like, he fits. So
next down the line, we go to the defensive side of the football on that line of scrimmage. Nick Miller, a 6'2", 193-pound defensive lineman. Again, right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, you know, Nick was a kid that his biggest challenge, and I talked to him about this on his visit, he's just going to have to get bigger. You know, he's going to have to be an Austin Eskew, Kevin Arnold kind of guy that's got to develop and get bigger with time. But he's super talented. He's got great twitch off the ball. He was absolutely, you know, their disruptor on the defensive side. He was a first-team All-State captain. You know, he plays with such a motor. He flies around. He's got good bend, changes direction well. You know, he's got all the athletic boxes ticked. You know, now what our job, or really Coach Quinlan's job, is going to do is going to be to fill him out.
And again, back to Florida for another one, Orlando, Florida, with Logan Nelson.
Yeah, you know, we don't take out-of-state guys or out-of-region guys, I think is a better way to describe it, typically from for the offensive and defensive line. So the guy's got to be special in order for us to take him. This guy checked the box. We actually got information from A.J. Blazek, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with A.J., but played at Iowa, was the offensive line coach at North Dakota State, He's at Vanderbilt right now, and he's got a twin brother that he recruited. AJ gave us a call and said, you need to look at this kid. He said, if I was at North Dakota State, we would be offering this guy. So brought him up on a late visit, really liked he and his mom. You know, he's going to be a big dude. He hasn't filled out yet upper body-wise, but he's got a big lower half, and so we're looking for some big-time upside from Logan.
We talk about some of these guys that can step in and play early. Is it easier at the skill position to be able to figure out the system and make that impact, or is it on the line of scrimmage to where you can see younger guys step up?
It's definitely with your skill positions, because first of all, there's not as much to know, and second, size isn't a premium, and strength aren't premium prerequisites. It takes typically more time the closer you get to the line of scrimmage to make an impact. The obvious exception to that rule is quarterback, because there is just so much to know for those guys. But running back, wide receiver, defensive back, those are all guys that can typically play earlier.
So we talked about one running back earlier, more the bowling ball type, I guess, a bigger guy, a little bit of speed there out of Wentzville. Now going with Eric Richardson. He's a 6'1", 170-pound running back. Your next guy coming in, this time from Waynesville. We obviously saw Sam Roberts was pretty good from Waynesville, Missouri as well. So kind of sticking back to that same town, bringing in Eric.
Yeah, it didn't hurt us at all. Eric is a kid, he can flat out go. He runs a sub-11 100 meter. He's fast, and he's dynamic with the ball in his hands. And so they're an excellent combination off of each other. Eric's a kid that can line up in a lot of different spots for us too. Kind of like a bigger than, but kind of like Jamar Moya, in the sense that if he gets to level two, you're not going to catch him. But can play the slot, can play in the backfield, just did a lot for them. He's a big-time track kid as well, and so we really liked him on his visit. He was one of our early visit guys.
Now, a little bit earlier, too, you talked about brothers who wanted to go maybe to a different school than where their older brother went. That's the case here with a Smithville native and Cody Samancic, his brother playing a quarterback at Washburn, but you've got Cody coming in here to play a little bit at the linebacker side.
Yeah, you know what? He's got size. He's got strength. He'll knock the heck out of you, just a real solid football player. We had so much depth at the linebacker position, guys. We eyeballed this kid. We said, you're our guy. Didn't bring anybody else in, and thank goodness he committed to us right away, because we only had money for one at that position. So there was one of those decisions where, typically in a class we're going to recruit three or four. Our need was such that even with the graduation of two of our linebackers, our depth is great at that position. But this kid fit the bill. He was our top guy, and we were able to get him.
Might make for some interesting matchups in that Washburn game down the line there.
I can't wait for that.
Well, and we talked about those schools, too, and some of the Kansas City schools. We see so many guys coming from Smithville. Really, in the grand scheme of things, isn't that big a place. I mean, is there something in the water in the Smithvilles and the Maryvilles that just produce that talent?
I don't know. We've had good luck with Smithville kids here. I think Coach Ambrosian does a great job down there. He's really kind of turned that program around, and they're playing at a really high level. I think that, he's a great football coach, and again, ties into that culture piece that we look for.
Well, next up on the list, we go back with the cornerback position, this time reaching down to Tulsa, Oklahoma, a 6'4", 179-pound cornerback in Cade Stacy. He was a 6'8", D1 champ down there.
Yeah. Anybody that knows Midwest football and you hear the word Jenks, you know exactly what we're talking about. They play a high level of football. He was the Oklahoman defensive MVP in the state. He's a really good cover corner. He was a guy that came in on an early visit. This is a kid that should be able to play early for us, we hope. Very talented, and so excited to get him. And it's a little added bonus that Adam Dorrell tried to recruit him, and we got him to Northwest Missouri State. So,
well, when you throw on two, a 6'4" cornerback, you kind of love the size out there.
Yeah, I don't think he's 6'4". I'd like to check the stats on that. I think that's a little inflated. He is 6'2". He's a good looking kid.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, regardless, that's still some nice size out there,
yep.
No doubt. Now, you look out to Western Nebraska for the next one to talk about here, bringing in a defensive lineman for Mitchell, Nebraska, in Scotts Bluff. Chance Simmons, a 6'4", 238-pound defensive lineman.
Yeah, first caught, Coach Cunningham is the one that went out there to recruit Chance. He had a little bit of background on him from Dave Tollefson Dave actually coached in an all-star game that Chance was a part of. And he told me some good things about the kid. He just plays with a relentless motor. He's a kid that's going to fill out and get bigger. So we're excited about that. And, you know, I only watch, guys, I only watch one television show, period. I mean, if it's not sports, so if it's not football, basically, I watch one show on TV, and it's Yellowstone. His dad is a rancher. So the second he walked in and told me he was a rancher, I had to recruit this kid. Now, he fits our room really good. He's a heck of a football player. You know, high school state rodeo champion. What more can you say?
Well, moving on the offensive line now. We mentioned a little bit earlier about Andrew Theobald and kind of touched on him and a guy transferring in from Boise, Idaho. Are there any concerns, though, when you have a guy that's that far from home? And, I mean, he's been out for a little while now and transferring in, but as you have those conversations?
No, you know, when any time a kid's an upperclassman and has lived away from home, you're pretty good with that. And Andrew's done a great job of fitting into the mix here, getting involved in the workouts. He's come up to our offices a couple times, and he's like, wow, we have never worked out like you guys work out any place I've ever been. But he's a competitive kid. He's really strong, plays with a nasty. We're excited to see what he can do.
And again, but back down to Florida, a wide receiver coming in. You've had some good luck with some wide receivers out of Florida, and Duke Timmons coming in, a 6'3 wide receiver.
Yes, Duke is a dynamic, explosive player. His dad's a football coach down there. He's a kid that came up on a really cold day and still decided he wanted to sign with the Bearcats. He's got great catch radius. He's very good in space. He looks really smooth. You know, his thing's just going to be to start to fill out that 6'3" frame, because he's a long kid, really good natural ball skills.
Next up, we go to Russellville, Arkansas. Trevion Taylor coming in, a 6'2", 254 defensive lineman. How do you kind of project Trevion coming in?
Well, Coach Wheeler is a Northwest Missouri State alum down in Arkansas, and you know me and my love for tall defensive linemen, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he just kept pounding on the table and pounding on the table, you know, and this kid is a heck of an athlete. When I watched the film, I had to agree. He's an all-state player, both as a junior and a senior. He's right now ranked in the top 3 in the state of Arkansas in wrestling. He's a 500-plus pound squat kid. He's a 400-pound bench kid. He's strong. And he's going to be able to play because he reminds me – he's bigger than, but reminds me a little bit of Elijah Green in that he can get up underneath people and move people. And anytime I get a wrestler, defensive lineman, I always kind of gravitate towards that. He did a great job in his testing up here, great family, and we're excited to finally get you know, one of Coach Wheeler's Arkansas defensive linemen up his place.
As you look ahead now at a tight end position out of Bennett, Nebraska, and Palmyra, you have to like the size of this guy. Andrew Walkie, a 6'5", tight end, 206 pounds. I think having a guy about that tall really shines on the line there, that tight end.
Yeah, you know, and this is a kid that's going to get big. And, you know, interesting, and I'm going to take a minute and talk about this a little bit, but Andrew's from an 8-man school in Nebraska, and you would be amazed. I get probably a dozen or more coaches a year, you know, that are worried about having to make a transition into an 8-man program, and their parents are losing their minds that, well, we have to transfer out of here because, you know, we're not going to get looked at by colleges and stuff like that. I can't speak for anybody else, but I'm going to tell you historically, we've made a lot of hay with 8-man kids, you know. Gosh darn, the defensive player of the year in 2019 was an 8-man guy, and you know, our starting outside linebacker is an 8-man guy. We'll come find you. This kid's got all the skill set. He's really natural catching the ball. They had him split out a little bit more, you know, just because of the 8-man game, but we feel like Andrew's got a ton of upside with him. And, you know, go ahead and shy away from the 8-man schools, because we'll collect a lot of those guys. Trust me.
I guess if you can play football, you can play football regardless, right?
It's really true.
Is this one, too, as a tight end but also play defensive side of the football, that you're kind of like, I'd like to switch from defensive end, Coach Sturdy?
Well, you know what? It's a good point, Matt. It's one of the things that we look for is I'm looking for frames, and we can work on that you know, where they end up isn't as important to me as getting those dimensions, those measurables, if we can. You know, there are guys that on the offensive line or defensive line that go vice versa. You know, sometimes, you know, Austin Eskew came here as a tight end, and it just, you know, it was pounding a square peg into a round hole. And so finally I switched him over to the defensive side, and, I mean, he took off. You know, so it's just finding the right kids, the right makeup, make sure their measurables are good enough that they can be multi as far as what they can do, and then watch them flourish.
Again, we are broadcasting live from A&G Restaurant in downtown Maryville on the National Signing Day Show with the head coach of the Bearcat football team, Rich Wright. We'll be back to have more for you from A&G right after this timeout.
Support for the Bearcats comes from the Bearcat Bookstore and the J.W. Jones Student Union. The bookstore supplies Bearcat apparel for men, women, and kids, as well as gifts, accessories, and Northwest logo items. More at nwmissouri.bncollege.com.
Support for KXCVKRNW is provided by the Northwest Foundation, providing support for the Northwest Alumni Association and the university's funding needs since 1971. More information is available on Facebook or online at nwmissouri.edu/alumni.
Support for KXCVKRNW comes from the Maryville Forum. In print or online at maryvilleforum.com, the forum provides local news, sports, and information, and news updates throughout the day. More at 660-562-2424.
Support for KXCVKRNW is brought to you by A&G Restaurant at 208 North Main in Maryville. A&G offers more than 100 menu items, Super Bonanza each weekday, Greek night every Friday, and gift cards for the holidays. More information is available at agrestaurant.com.
And welcome back to the KXCV KRNW Bearcat Coaches Show. Not in the Coaches Show. That was yesterday. Today is the National Signing Day Show. We've been busy here the last couple of days.
I'm in the wrong season if I'm doing the Coaches Show right now. I'll speak for Mac. Don't worry about it.
There we go. It's been a busy time here. But, again, we're with Rich Wright, the head coach of the Bearcat football team, on our National Signing Day Show. And a couple other guys to kind of highlight here just a little bit. Will Berenson coming in out of Jefferson City, a long snapper. And while that doesn't seem like a big thing, but when you look at the past seasons and things, that's a pretty important position you have there on the field.
Oh my gosh, yes. And you know, he's a kid that's got a great chance to win a state championship in wrestling. So he's a football player, wrestler. You know, those are one of those positions that you don't notice until you notice, if you know what I'm saying. And, you know, he's a kid that, you know, played both sides of the football for him, did a lot of different things. Obviously going to specialize here a little bit more in the snapping piece. But to be able to recruit a kid of his caliber, we're excited about. And I like his toughness. I mean, his dad was telling me a story that – actually, I think it was mom. I take that back. His junior year in high school, they were wrestling, and he got hit in the head with a knee, and he sliced his head open, and had to have staples in his head. And he was supposed to wrestle two nights later, and the doctor told him that he really wasn't supposed to wrestle. And the mom said she turned and looked, and the dad and the son are looking at each other, and they were like, are you saying that we can't wrestle or we shouldn't wrestle? And so he ended up wrestling the next night and won. So he's a tough kid.
Got to love it. Wrestlers, there's something else. Next one we want to touch on, True Melby. It's listed as a 6'9", 212 defensive. Is he 6'9"?
He's 6'8", 6'9". He's long.
That's a big kid. And a brother of Trey on the team.
Absolutely. Another one of those brother combinations. True is just one of those frames that we're going to fill out and see where it fits. And good player, played on the offensive and defensive side up there. You know, the big deal there is just going to be to get him to fill out his frame.
And also talk about a player returning to Maryville, and Tate Oglesby, a wide receiver. Initially went to Emporia State for basketball, but coming back to Maryville.
Yeah, you know, we just got Tate into workouts starting in January, so he's getting acclimated to everything that we do and how we do it. And, you know, just looking forward to see what he can do in terms of spring practice. He was obviously a really good high school football player at Maryville High. He's going to start at wide receiver is where we're going to place him at. He played both offensively and defensively when he was here. Think the receiver's a little bit better fit for him at the college game, and just kind of see what happens.
So National Signing Day, this is kind of the point where we're kind of sky's the limit for all these kids, and we're kind of looking forward to so many things down the line. One of those guys that wasn't that long ago was Sam Roberts that was in this position. Now he's off at the East-West Shrine Bowl. He's competing a chance to make it in the NFL and get drafted a little bit later on this spring. What is this like for you as a coach and really another father figure to this young man who came into Maryville and you developed and seen him at this level?
It's fun to watch. I mean, you know, and for Sam, it's football, but it really doesn't matter what it is. If it's those guys, if it's Jackson Barnes transitioning into medical sales and going to go be a big success, to feel like you had a small piece in it is pretty cool. Going back to Sam and the journey, I mean, you know, I can remember this conversation really vividly. We were walking around on the track, and there were some people that were in his ear that were trying to tell him that he should not come back for his senior year, and he should try and declare, maybe make a camp and see what he could do. And I just looked at him, and I said, Sam, you've spent 2 years where you've played through injuries that most people wouldn't have played with. You've not played a healthy season at Northwest Missouri State. I said, if you come back for your senior year, I think you're going to show the world exactly what I know. And he trusted me on that, and he came back and really lit it up. And his stock has gone up exponentially. Did really well in the Hula Bowl. All the NFL scouts I talked to, they really focus. I mean, everybody else is focused on the game because that's what's on TV. Where the NFL scouts are, they're in the practices, and they said he absolutely lit it up at those practices. Watched a couple clips this morning before I came to the radio show on him now at the East-West game, and he's doing the typical Sam stuff. Tanner Owen said at the Hula Bowl, they were like, who the heck is that guy and how the heck do you block him? And he was just like, welcome to my world. And he goes, there's a reason why we called him Godzilla. You know, he's just, he's really flourished. He's developed his game. You know, he's got all of the measurables. He's 6'5", 295 at 13% body fat. He's going to make somebody a great surprise. And from what I'm hearing, you can take this with a grain of salt because I've seen it go a lot of ways over the years. There are a lot of people that think he's going to go in the third or fourth round, which would be great for Northwest Missouri State.
Oh, my, no doubt about that. And when you look at the guys you're bringing in now, recruits, you can point to guys like Sam, Dave Tolleson, others, too, that if they come in and develop like you expect them to develop, that there is a future for them down the line.
Yeah, you know, what we tell them to do is that because of the success of our program, you know, and this is in my recruiting spiel, so thanks for the segue. But I mean, you know, we show up one graphic of that and say we've had 25 guys sign NFL contracts and truly make it, not guys that are in camps, but truly sign NFL contracts and have careers. And I talk all the time about the people that put their eggs in that basket are going to get them scrambled. If you do our process, if you do the little things right, if you get your degree and it creates the foundation to stand on, at the end of your 4.5 years here, every NFL team comes to Maryville, Missouri to watch our kids because of the success we've had. And so if you're to that ability, you're going to have the best of both worlds. You're going to have a degree from Northwest Missouri State, which is going to open all kinds of doors for you, but you're also going to have the opportunity to play in the NFL. And, you know, Sam's story is unique in the sense that he had a lot of Division I offers. And this is an example of people not listening to kids. I'm not a genius, but everybody wanted him to play offensive tackle, and he wanted to play defensive line. And when I saw him, I said, you're a D lineman. and literally that's how we ended up with him. And he's had a great career, and he's a better kid. You know, I couldn't be more happy for him. I was really pleased that he got in that East-West game because that's one of the two big marquee games in the whole bowl season. And I'm just excited to see what the next chapter holds for him.
Another one to touch on real quick that we've seen. You mentioned Tanner Owen, who is also at the Hula Bowl, too. How's Tanner doing? I know they kind of joke, Grandpa, always a little bit slow getting up, but a guy that did not miss a game at Northwest.
You know, he's one of those kids that, you know, you always want in your corner. You know, he was such, you know, behind the scenes playing offensive line, he was unequivocally the leader of our offense for 3 years. And that's hard to do from the offensive line position. I was proud of him. He played well in the Hula Bowl. Got a late invite to the NFLPA game that was on last weekend. He was playing guard, for goodness sakes. I thought he did a great job in there. You know, I think that he's going to have an opportunity But he's going to be a success in whatever he does in life just because of how he approaches it.
And really, when you talk about it, a lot of the guys have gone through the program. I imagine that's another draw for the recruiting, too, when you look at not only the players that go out and are successful in football, but business and different things you can point to that they really have an opportunity to come here at Northwest and do well after they graduate.
Absolutely, and that's really what it's all about. You know, I talk to parents all the time that myself and our staff are really the bridge between high school in the real world, you know, and so we're that linchpin between mom and dad and them going out and figuring out life on their own. And so we take that responsibility seriously and just try and develop, you know, all aspects of the kids. And that's the great part about the balance here at Northwest Missouri State, and I think why it's resonated with me for so many years is just that it's really what college football intended to be, that football's big time here and it's really important and the community supports it, and it is what it is, but you never lose the academic piece. It hasn't been infiltrated to the level of a lot of the FBS schools are with regards to it being truly just a business. It's not keeping kids eligible. It's not. It's what college athletics was intended to be.
Now as we wrap up National Signing Day, obviously spring practice right around the corner, despite feeling like it's what, 2 below 0 out there right now. It's awful. But what's next for you guys? Is a chance to kind of take a deep breath before diving back into the next event?
Well, tomorrow morning I have the MIAA head coaches meeting, so I don't know how much of a deep breath I'm going to get. I actually told my staff to get out of here Thursday and Friday and take a little bit of downtime. We've been grinding at it. I mean, our schedule, I don't think most people understand. I mean, I'll just give you 5 days of it. So we started our first visit when we got back from the convention was on a Friday. We started the visit at 12:30 in the afternoon. We finished it up on Saturday morning at 11:30. We started the next visit on Saturday afternoon at 12:30 and finished it at 11:30. We started the next visit on Sunday afternoon at 12:30 and finished it on Monday at 12:30. We got Tuesday to pause, and then Wednesday we started again at 12:30 and finished at 11:30. And it just kind of goes for those 2 weeks. And it's 7 days a week. And even when we got the commitments, it's following back up. It's going back into the high school. It's making sure everything's kosher. It's answering all those questions. So to take a pause and not be the face in front of everything for a couple days isn't all bad.
No doubt about that. And so much of the success of the program, too, deals with what the players you've got in the program right now do in the offseason. And the workout in the weight room and the things there. Of course, Joe Quinlan doing a great job there with a lot of things. But what's been the process since the end of the football season to now, and then to make sure that they're ready for spring ball?
You know, I think the first thing we talked about was just that we lost a big core of kids that have been very important here. And it's the COVID deal has created a situation where our younger kids really haven't had to emerge as much as they typically would, and that's going to be extremely important. You know, for our class of 2019 and 2020 to now establish themselves in our two deep, I think that's going to be extremely important. We've got to get Coach Rosewell's looking at me out the window right now. Sorry, folks, I had to laugh. He stuck his nose up on the window. So
well, it's a good thing it didn't stick.
Yeah, no kidding. But, you know, what we talked about is that we're going to have to get it done with hard work. And those guys came back right away in January, and they're back in the weight room. They're getting after it both in the running portion and the lifting portion of what they do. A big part of what we're trying to do right now is also establish the new generation of leaders. Who are the guys that are going to emerge and become the voices on the football team? So that's always a work in progress. You know, for as we joke about, you know, we joke about spring ball doesn't look like it should happen right now. Well, starting next week, we begin Winter Wonderland. So if you guys want to come out at 5:30 in the morning and
see how cold it
is out during that time out on the outdoor field, you're welcome to do that. But we got a couple weeks of that. But I mean, shoot, spring practice starts March 14th, so it's not far away when there's 28 days in February. So we'll just reload and kind of take a look at the young guys and what we've got, and then we've got to address some answers as far as where we see deficiencies, and that's why we held back a little bit of money for portal slash transfer kids, and try and go from there.
Well, we're kind of winding down here, but it's been a fantastic year for Northwest athletics as a whole. It started off with that game at Fort Hays State back in early September, but it was a historic fall across the board. Do you kind of feel that resonate throughout the halls as you walk down through soccer, volleyball, basketball, and get to football? It's just It's been pretty remarkable.
It has, and you know, he stuck his nose up on the window, so I'm going to brag on him for a minute. You know, whether it was the reason or not, I don't care. You know, something that Coach Rosewell talked about in a head coach's meeting before the season started was trying to win that all sports trophy and how important that was to him. And I think when you see a guy that's had the level of success that he's had at Northwest Missouri State over time, you know, it's easy for him just to focus on his tennis program. But I mean, he stood up and vehemently talked to all of us about wanting to do that. And so I just thought it was really cool. I thought that to be able to walk down the hall and talk to Coach Gordon and talk to Coach Worth and, you know, watch them as their seasons unfolded. And then, you know, my goodness, you know what Ben's going to do with the basketball program. But to watch the transformation that Austin's made here with our women's basketball program, you know, it's been a great time to be in athletics at Northwest Missouri State. And I think it just shows the level of importance we have with regards to our intercollegiate athletics in Maryville, Missouri.
Yeah, just a special culture when you walk through the hallways up there.
You know, we all just have such a great relationship together, too. Everybody's very supportive. I left out cross-country. Cross-country obviously had an outstanding fall, and they're doing well in their winter, and will continue to do well in the spring. But, yeah, it's just, you know, they're a good bunch of people. They're quality people. I think one of the things that we have that's helped us a lot is we have coaches in place that understand Northwest and understand our culture, and we've had continuity. You know, you show me programs that have revolving doors with coaches, and I'll show you typically programs that aren't successful. So being able to not only hire good coaches, but keep them here is something I think has been important.
Well, Rich, it's been fun talking with you this past hour and kind of previewing the players you've got coming into the program with the National Signing Day. And, again, always good to talk with you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. I can't wait to get this thing back rolling for the fall.
All right. Sounds good. Again, we've been talking with Rich Wright, the head football coach at Northwest Missouri State, on our National Signing Day program here on KXCV Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe. We'll be back and have basketball coming up this Saturday on KXCV, KRNW as well, with Northwest men's and women's teams going down to St. Joseph to face Missouri Western. But again, thanks to Rich as we talk football during this past hour. And that'll do it for our show from A&G.